I'm Justin.
I'm Brad.
Michael?
Michael?
Where's Michael?
I don't know where he is.
Wasn't he just here like 2 seconds ago?
I thought he was. Well, the show must go on. We are the Cinema Guys.
Welcome to the show.
Well, how's it going today?
Good. In lieu of Michael's absence, we do have a guest.
We have a special guest with us today.
A new cinema guy.
Hey, guys.
Andrew. How you doing today, Andrew?
Very well. Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Andrew was the only person that I knew when we played that game on the cell phone with the movie game.
Oh, yes.
Like, you gave up pretty quick. You stopped playing. Michael stopped playing. Andrew took it as farther than anyone else and was really good.
Thank you.
I'm always impressed with Andrew's knowledge of movies pre-1960.
Because he kept going to say 1940.
Well, probably should have said 1940. He would always put these,
Chaplin game is strong.
He would always put these old movies, and I would always just guess Alfred Hitchcock and get it right.
All right. Yeah, I give up on games pretty quick. So if you ever play a game with me, I give up.
So he does. You have an extensive movie knowledge, which I appreciate.
So recently we went to see Split.
Split.
The new M. Night Shyamalan movie. And I will say right at the beginning, and I will emphasize this before we get into the movie.
Spoiler alert.
We'll get into probably quite a few spoilers.
Yeah, actually, there is a giant spoiler alert. And if you don't want to hear anything about this movie, you should turn this podcast off right now and come back to it after you've seen it.
I think it's kind of hard to talk about this movie without spoiling it.
Because that's the best part of the movie.
But anyway, we'll start it off with our famous flick picks.
Flick picks! Flick picks!
Since we're doing M. Night Shyamalan, I think we should do some of our top of his movies that we've seen. I haven't seen all of them.
You haven't seen them all?
No.
Oh, actually, no. I've seen them all but one. I have not seen The Visit. That's it.
Everything his newest one? Seen,
the newest
was
one.
Was that his newest one? Yeah.
It's on the HBO Go app, which all of his movies are.
Yes.
Last night, I went and actually bookmarked them all because I'm going to watch them all again. Because I am now a super fan once more.
I miss most of his Blue Period.
Which is your favorite of his movies?
I would have to go with Signs. Love. We've talked about this.
We've talked about this many times.
Love Signs. I love Mel Gibson's character in it. I love Joaquin Phoenix's character in it. I love how he dealt with the whole thing. It did get cheesy towards the end once you actually see the alien, but before that, I loved it. I just love their characters. I love the conversation they have. I love the dry humor. I think they're a quirky pair. And I love the idea of looking at a global event from just the eyes of not the heroes or not the people who are going to stop the aliens, just the random farmer and his crew.
I enjoyed it up until towards the end. It kind of lost me towards the end of the movie.
No, but it was so good.
Like when it was the creepy, the aliens where you're just kind of seeing their feet or like shadows or anything like that. But once you got to the swing away, it lost me.
Swing away, Meryl. Swing away. It's a great line.
That's what it lost me. It lost me at swing away.
It kind of gave me chills when I saw it. I was like, wow, the way that it ties together.
Yeah, everything is purpose.
With like what was kind of the meaningless death and what created the crisis of faith for Mel Gibson. And then it's kind of all brought full circle to where, but somehow her death is being given meaning by like the encounter with the alien, which I just thought, I don't know, that seemed a little, I think something like that kind of happens in Split.
Like her near-death experience gave her some sort of foreknowledge of the future. And so therefore, as she's sitting there dying, she has four flashes.
Where a woman's tragedy is exploited by M. Night for the sake of a cheap plot contrivance. Right? But we'll get to that.
What else on your list? What would be next behind Signs?
The next behind
Signs. How about you give your top three?
Yeah, top three. Will be Unbreakable and Split because I love them. And I can't say Split before Unbreakable. I have to say after that.
Fair enough.
I mean, I will say that Sixth Sense will always have a special place because of the fun ending twist that rocked the world. Like, someone even told me when I went and saw Sixth Sense in the movie theater, hey, there's a crazy Indian. And I was like, oh, man, why'd you tell me? And the whole time I'm looking for it, I did not see it coming. So Sixth Sense is good, but it's Signs, Unbreakable, Split, Boom.
I think the Sixth Sense would be top of my list just because it was the first one and there was the surprise ending that you're like, what?
He came out of the gate hot, man.
Well, yeah, and even seeing it, you know, you watch it again, you try to see, pick out things of like, you know, Bruce Willis never talks to anybody in the movie. He's in rooms, but he's never talked to anybody with a child. And just trying to see, not that I would ever guess a million years that he was dead, but if you haven't seen Sixth Sense yet, I'm sorry.
He sees dead people.
He's dead.
The red doorknob.
The red doorknob, right, that he could never get through. Yeah, I like it.
After that would probably be Unbreakable. I watched that again recently. It wasn't as good as the first time I saw it, but it
was
still...
Have you seen the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt? Now whenever you see Unbreakable, I hear, Unbreakable. Unbreakable. Hey, yeah. Damn it. It's a miracle.
And probably Split after that, because...
Boom. So most of our list matched up.
I really enjoyed Lady in the Water quite a bit.
See, that's when I'm actually... That's my second rewatch. I'm going to rewatch Unbreakable. I've seen pieces here and there. I watched, but I kind of did a half. I watched for the scenes I wanted to, but I want to rewatch the whole thing.
Hated The Happening.
And I wanted to, The Happening was not great.
I did not like The Village.
See, The Village was somebody ruined the ending for me, so I knew the whole time that they weren't really experiencing what they were experiencing, so I was kind of.
Like I said, science-y. But that's all.
What about The Last Airbender?
Last Airbender.
And After Earth.
After Earth.
I never saw After Earth.
Barf. After Earth is worse than The Last Airbender.
And I didn't think The Last Airbender was that bad, but I'm not a big fan. I've never really watched the cartoon, so
I love the cartoon more. It's probably the best, I think, animated thing ever created, but I actually hadn't seen it.
It's not British.
Exactly. I hadn't seen it, so I saw the movie, and then I was like, oh, well, this movie's not great, but I feel like there's a cool world that he tapped into. And so that's when I started watching the show, and then it only got better.
And I did not see his most recent one.
The Visit.
Yeah.
So what I'm getting from this is that you have The Sixth Sense and Unbreakable, his first two films. And thematically, they're very different, but the switch-ups at the end, or the reveals, are remarkably different too. But from there... The quality of his films tend to go down, 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 down until we get to The Visit, right? And that was like a $5 million budget, I think, right? Very lean.
Was it?
Yeah. There was like nothing to it. And then
it looks pretty simple.
Yeah. And then he puts out something that's really well received critically, but he's lost so much of his fan base because everybody kind of took off, probably after The Village, especially.
I gave him up until The Happening.
Okay.
Oh, you gave him up until The Happening or after
The
Happening?
No, after The Happening. Yeah. I watched his movies, I think, up until The Happening.
Yeah, I loved... Yeah, it was like, you're right, Signs, Unbreakable, this is crazy. Sixth Sense, Unbreakable. But I like Signs just as much. I thought it was just as good. I did not, The Village. And what was your favorites then?
So my favorites would be... Unbreakable is probably my favorite. It wasn't like after I saw it. When I saw it, I didn't really like it at all. But
why?
I love comic books. Have collected comic books since I was like 9. Been an aficionado. So something about that really spoke to me. I don't know. Going back, I've probably seen it, I don't know, 5 or 6 times over the years.
What grew on you then?
At first, I thought it was kind of a sophomore slump versus The Sixth Sense. But I think everybody went into that movie expecting a shocking, like, you know, gobsmacking reveal like what they had in The Sixth Sense. And when that's not exactly how it unfolded, they wanted The Sixth Sense kind of redux. They wanted the exact same.
He still
same
got
formula.
A pretty good surprise that he was the villain the entire time.
I'm not going to lie. I went in hoping for that big twist.
And like this movie, there was a big twist, but it's not the twist that we expected. And so
I know,
I think
that made it even better
because
I didn't even see this coming. I was looking for the M. Night twist. I was like, all right, is she really him the whole time? Blah, blah, blah. I thought that was going to be, I was like, oh, you know what? That's why he maced her last, because she really maced herself or something, like it was her, or he doesn't exist.
She
she was the person the whole time or something.
I was even saying that to you.
The twist came, and I was like, oh, okay, and it was done. I went, before you get to that very last scene, I was like, all right, I guess.
You don't want to get too far into it yet until we really talk about it.
Unbreakable is also a superhero film before they were making a bunch of superhero films.
That's right.
Which was cool.
It was 2000.
He was ahead of the game there, too. It was 2000.
Yeah, 2000. There was nothing going on.
Superhero movie without really...
Right, but no one, like, movie. Now if you did that, people be like, oh, we're just trying to make a different superhero, because now superhero movie is its own genre. Then there was, like, Blade and some Batmans, and that was about it.
But it's a superhero film in the same vein as, like, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, where it's not, you know, they're flying around in capes and they're going into outer space or whatever. It's, like, it's very gritty, like, down in the
streets.
There's
still more to come. We have not finished the story.
So my point was, we got to The Visit,
really
low budget, really lean, really well received, and he kind of, like, skipped off the bottom
there. Right.
But only the people that really stuck with him, kind of the aficionados, like, really... got that. So I think M. Night does better when he has a challenge and he has no money to put into his films. That's my takeaway.
That's good.
Because when he has money, you get The Last Airbender and After Earth.
Oh, After
Don't
Earth
give
was
him a budget.
Barf. After Earth was definitely the worst.
I skipped that one because it did not look good at all.
I've never been more disappointed because it looked freaking cool. It looked really cool. And it was not cool. The Last Airbender was way more entertaining.
I just wanted to pause for a minute and tell you all about something that we love and actually use a lot here at the Cinema Guys, and it is a service called MoviePass. It is a monthly subscription service that allows you to see a new 2D movie every day. For more information, check it out in our show notes. There's a link. Also, you can go to 134inc.com/MoviePass and give you a little more information. We love MoviePass. All right, back to the show.
We saw Split.
Split, split, split.
For those that don't know, split, split. It is.
More effective. I'm not as good as the voices as
James
McAvoy. McAvoy. Split.
James McAvoy is a character that has multiple personalities.
23 to be exact.
23.
Or 24. Or is it 24?
And it's the 24th that they. Even
unleash
coming out
the beast.
I thought it was a very good, like I liked it. I didn't love it.
I loved it so
much as you did. Justin.
The first 5-star on my Letterboxd app that I've given a movie since we started watching movies. First 5-star. There has been no others.
You didn't even give. Well, I guess you wouldn't have gave Star Wars a 5-star because there wasn't enough action.
I really loved Unbreakable when it first came out. I remember thinking this was so cool. It was a superhero movie. I was geeked up about it. So, and the fact that in the end, the big twist is that David Dunn.
Spoiler alert!
David Dunn is at the diner, and they're like, "Who is that bad guy?" And he's like, "Mr. Glass," and you're like. This whole, and I like was giddy. I was like giddy. I was almost laughing because I was so excited that Bruce Willis was in it and he was doing David Dunn.
So basically, the spoiler, we'll get it out of the way. Split is an origin story for a villain in the Unbreakable universe. So you're watching an origin story without even knowing it until the very end.
Which is awesome because that was his point, to make an origin story without anyone knowing it was an origin story. And well done, M. Night. You got us again.
So let me read you a quote.
Let's hear a quote.
After The Visit, M. Night was interviewed by just one person.
Ooh, okay.
It was a local radio show.
It was a local podcast. Wisconsin.
But somebody wanted to hear what he had to say.
Okay.
And M. Night had the following to say. The idea of making something because... of an opportunity has no interest at all for me. So this is responding to the assertion that he would just be like going after a naked money grab because people love The Unbreakable. So he would then make something because it was going to be commercially successful. In fact, it's very off-putting to me. Anyway, et cetera, et cetera. Now, there's something that's percolating in me of an approach that is maybe something of interest to me.
A very vague statement.
Do with that what you will. That's the best I can say. Something is happening. I can feel it. Something is happening. It would have to be so different than Unbreakable. A studio would lose their minds because it doesn't feel at all like a sequel. So this was in September 2015.
Wow.
So even back then.
So he knew.
He knew what he was doing. Not that that was that long ago. But I felt, I don't know, maybe you're more along the lines. Because when the lights went up, I looked over at Justin and he's like choking back tears.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
he wow. was.
I was Justin, like all struck. I was like.
Justin loved it. As soon as that scene happened at the end, it was like this movie turned into a whole.
It's true.
On a whole nother level for him.
I thought the movie was like, oh, that's pretty good. It's pretty good. And then that happened. I was like.
And my head's swiveling back and forth between Justin, who's got like tears. Not quite. And the screen. And I'm just like, what did I miss? What did I miss? Because at the end, I felt like. Kind of like narrative whiplash, you know what I mean?
Right.
I get it. I know exactly who David Dunn is.
Right.
You know, I know, I get what's going on, but what is going on?
I felt it like as soon as the news reporter said, oh, they're calling him the Horde, like my brain started like, wait a minute. And it all happened right at perfect timing for my brain to like connect it all. It was awesome. I loved Split. I mean, and the rest of the movie is pretty good, but like that part made me love it so much to where I can't wait for 10 years down the road if there's like two more of these to watch them all together. And
you know, there were a couple of interesting and this is on us as the audience, myself anyway, and I don't know if you either of you had the same experience, but there were a few things before the reveal in the film. I mean, the easiest one was it's the Philadelphia Zoo. Like M. Night, I mean, and basically he like highlighted it because you saw the sign of the Philadelphia Zoo as they were coming out.
Yeah, I guess I never put those together.
And Unbreakable was in very like obviously in Philadelphia, right. If you remember the film. But then earlier when the psychiatrist is approaching the zoo, like the gate, you see a sign from the highway in the background and like you can see that it's in Philadelphia. I think it's one of those things where, like with The Sixth Sense, like any of his movies, you can go back and you can begin to put puzzle pieces together.
I know at the ending, at first for me, I was like, this was a good movie. And my first reaction wasn't excitement like you. It was like, oh, he just kind of threw this piece in there to try to connect it to another one of his big movies. Like, I just thought it was a...
No magic thing. In that thought.
Like, I didn't think of it as... Oh, I thought, I was like, oh, he just had to try to connect it to this universe at first.
And now if I am right.
I read up more on it after the fact.
Because so this was a character who was supposed to be an Unbreakable.
Correct.
And then he thought, hey, I can't put three major characters in a film, which is a good move on his part.
And since then, I watched Unbreakable this week. And the scene that... James McAvoy's character Kevin is supposed to be in, you can completely see it because it's this character. He has girls caught. It's almost the exact same scenario, so to speak, except the guy doesn't have multiple personalities that goes after Bruce Willis. He's just a really big, strong guy.
So here's a good question. And this gets a little abstract maybe, but so there's this motif, I guess, in that movie. In Unbreakable and in Split of like young girls being exploited or there being some kind of nefarious, maybe like sexual kind of abuse or something like that, like toward younger women.
Right.
And we clearly see that in Split, right? I mean, it's kind of inferred that Dennis wanted to kidnap the girls for less than, honorable reasons, but Patricia put him, who is these are two of the
he had basically two main personalities that took over, and then you'd have who was Hedwig, the little kid Hedwig
the 9-year-old would
he could come in at any
who loved
time.
Kanye Josiah love Kanye. Talking to you.
Dennis definitely had ulterior motives with the girls that she would come out and stop him on.
Right. So a criticism that I've seen in a bunch of different reviews that's been levied against the film.
Oh, yeah.
Is that,
what are the criticisms?
So a major one, and it's kind of timely, is that M. Night is basically exploiting sexual violence and sexual abuse toward women to further a male villain's character arc. Now, I don't think that you could make that criticism, and I don't recall it being made in Unbreakable, just because it was maybe more like ancillary to the plot. But in this one, a lot of the plot turns on that. The implication is that Dennis would kind of take advantage of having abducted the girls.
Right, right.
He makes the girls kind of disrobe And so then you get that kind of grindhouse exploitation feel. I mean, it's grimy. It's in the basement. They're kind of like scantily clad.
Right, right.
And then you have, what is her name? Anya Taylor-Joy. So Casey, or Cassie, right? Who has been...
Who wore like 30 layers. So
right, who wore 30 scared. Layers because she had been into, what, self-mutilation, right? And then you have these, the flashbacks, you know, more spoilers, the flashbacks to when she was younger, where the implication, again, is that her uncle had sexually abused her, and she's still in his custody even.
Okay.
So you have all of that that's very central to the plot, but you kind of go along in the faith that M. Night's going to like make it all pay off, and he's going to make it all mean something in the end. And really, ultimately, all that it ended up being was the Beast, the 24th personality, the sole reason that he didn't tear her to shreds was because he saw what she had done to herself as a result of her suffering. And so then he, you know, he identified with her, and that's why he basically like let her
I thought it's because she wasn't a virgin.
No, he identified she was also not
scarred. She wasn't a virgin and the other ones were.
No, it was is because she was scarred and not perfect. Basically, so he...
I mean, maybe in the sequel, he'll get his just desserts.
So I hope she comes back, because I wonder... The way that they left it off was she was going back to her uncle, right? Right. So she was going back under the care, quote-unquote, of this man who's been abusing her for years and years.
Right.
You know, so that's just begging.
Yeah, I did think that those flashbacks would amount to more than what they did.
Same.
That's why the whole time I was like, oh, well, she's obviously him... Because the flashbacks we're seeing are her, and
that all this was her the whole time. Right, because like what happened to her?
What he had done to her created a dissociative break in her, and like so you're kind of seeing all this from like a split perspective, which would have been.
I mean,
kind of in retrospect.
Sometimes I feel like, especially lately, because there was a similar criticism in Passengers because of the sensitivity of what's going on in our world, like. It's like, okay, well, people got to be tell a story. I think if there's anything, it was more of a, so he had to make these personalities because of his horrible past.
Right.
And she had to cut herself because of her horrible past. So I thought, I didn't think it in terms of sexuality, that, oh, these are girls and these are boys. I just thought more like, oh, people have horrible pasts and look at how we deal with it all. So I guess I wasn't thinking of them being women or men or this. I was like, oh, this cutting gives her some sort of relief, whereas this Dennis character gives, you know, him some sort of escape, or all these characters give him a way to recreate his world.
Different people deal with their traumatic situations in their life different ways.
There was a so before the end, if you're just watching it, what did you guys think? Were you into his character? Were you into like what's going to happen? Like you were digging it?
I was into it. I was getting a little nitpicky in the filmmaking of it as I was watching it, because I didn't like the extreme close up and centered all the time when someone was talking on their face. That was just me getting nitpicky in the movie. See, but we were also in the third row, so.
Right. I did like that. I did like, and it's interesting that we went to the third row, because I felt like his filming technique was he was trying to evoke a feeling of claustrophobia and closed in spaces, and kind of like that suffocating feel of being stuck in a room and with like this feeling of the clock is ticking down to the appearance of the Beast and like impending doom. And it is a relatively it's funny, because when in the beginning you're in that wide open space out in the parking
lot,
and at the end when she's brought out, you know, and you're in that wide open space out in the zoo.
Right.
So it's like you went into a tunnel, which you really did. You went into a tunnel and then you came out of it, but it really felt that way. And I feel like his filming style contributed to that. So, and I had read that like he very intentionally filmed it to feel claustrophobic, which is why. But I don't know if that was effective or it was just kind of irksome.
No, it definitely had that claustrophobic feel, but I think just some of it was his... I was getting nitpicky with his framing.
I feel like it was more style than substance?
Yeah, more of the style, his framing of characters and stuff, where it was anytime someone was talking, they were right in the center of the screen and it was just their face. But that was just me.
What about James McAvoy?
He was pretty phenomenal.
Amazing. I know, right?
Amazing.
I don't know I think he could pull off.
Yeah, at the end when he just started breaking into all of them, he'd go from one personality to the next personality, and just in an instant.
It was pretty awesome.
It was, yeah, it was great.
The movie took a huge turn for me when he was actually eating those girls.
Right. Like,
when the beast, because when the beast came out,
I was like, okay, you know, everything's going to be all right.
If you didn't know,
like,
you were in the,
oh my gosh, he is really digesting these girls' stomachs or whatever it was.
Right. She opens the door, and like, if you didn't know that girl was extraneous to like the plot, like the visible entrails, you're like, oh, okay. So that's happening now.
Yeah.
So we're onto that part. This must be the end game.
Right. Yeah.
It went from this claustrophobic, tense, you know, movie of no hope, or they're never going to get out, to it was a monster movie of you're running from the monster.
Right. And I can think literally of a few other movies. Like the one that comes to mind, which may be a little obscure, but you guys are the cinema guys, so you might know this one. Or I think we talked about this maybe. Sunshine?
Oh, you know, if Michael was here, he loves Sunshine. You've seen it, right?
I have, but I don't.
I've not seen it. I know it's one that
really
I'm supposed
remember
to see.
A whole lot,
but that's another film that.
Where's Michael? Where's he at?
Where'd Michael go?
It bears some similarity to this, but in the end, it goes from being like a taut thriller, kind of claustrophobic in closed spaces. I mean, they're out in space, but they're in a spaceship. It's a race against time. Very similar, but then boom, like out of nowhere, it turns into a kind of a monster flick. And something similar happened there. But yeah, I was also reading that James McAvoy, like his transitions from personalities, like kind of decreases sequentially up until what, almost in that very last scene where she invokes like Kevin Crumb, the name, right? It switches him out. And then he's switching from personality to personality every 10 seconds. That was just.
Yeah, it made me go do a little bit of like Wikipedia searching about
DID.
DID, because I was actually interested in the physical transformation, which I have read that there was cases of people needing glasses, not needing glasses.
Okay.
But like something as extreme as being diabetic and not being diabetic in another personality is not real, but they don't know. They think there's something in the brain that really does trigger these things. But the idea of them not knowing what the other personality is a real thing. People with split personalities, they won't.
They're completely cut
off. Unless their personalities decide to talk to each other, they're not. They don't know what happened. Which I thought was interesting.
So obviously, you would highly recommend it.
Yeah, I would say go see it right now. Take me with you.
I think it's worth seeing. Especially if you're a fan of his earlier stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you've kind of given up on the M. Night thing, I would say give him another chance, because it's a solid movie. And it goes with Unbreakable very well.
Even the pictures, apparently.
I would recommend seeing it in the theater, just because I think there's enough that he does with the camera.
Yeah.
That you're not really going to get the impact of it on the small screen.
And part of it, I want to see it again to see if there's any other pieces that connect to Unbreakable, like music cues or anything within the movie earlier.
That's interesting.
Red doorknobs.
Have you been watching anything this week you want to recommend?
So I have been like robbing the HBO Go app. Because it's not really mine, so I just keep watching a lot of stuff on it. Anything that I've recommended lately, I'm still watching. But I just finished the movie Criminal with
Kevin Costner.
But it's like Ryan Reynolds, Tommy Lee Jones, Kevin Costner, Gary Oldman. It's a huge cast for a pretty crappy movie. It's basically Face Off without faces. It's like Memory Off. Like at the very beginning, Ryan Reynolds dies. And they take his memories and put them in Kevin Costner's head. But Kevin Costner's a criminal. But he also has this good guy in him now. And that's basically the whole movie. It's not that action-y. It's kind of lame. And it's not very action-packed.
It's Philip K. Dick's world. Hollywood's just living in it now.
Exactly. So I kind of watched that. And then I watched a little bit more Lemony Snicket's, which I still am really enjoying. How they did it, it's good. Who was it?
Do you like MPH in that?
I love it.
You think Count Olaf?
He is hilarious. Have you kept cutting that? His physical humor is hilarious.
I started it, and I thought he's great.
And I watched one other movie that I have been wanting to see. Oh, Now You See Me Too. I wanted to go see that when it came out with all of us, but no one else did. Not as great as Now You See Me 1, so which I really liked.
So out of what you've watched this week, sounds like Lemony Snicket you would recommend.
Oh, yeah. We are doing recommendations.
The others, maybe not so much.
I would say hold out on those other ones.
What about our special guest, Andrew? Is there anything that you would like to recommend to our listeners this week?
So for this week, like, we could start there and probably finish there. So I have been plowing through Narcos.
Which a lot of people have said is great.
I guess. Yeah, I'm not. Interestingly, I have no. I've never talked to anybody about it but you.
And I haven't even seen it.
Similar to lots of things. So Narcos is actually really good. If for those of you who don't know, it's about Pablo Escobar and the Medellin cartel. So cocaine, Colombia.
Medellin.
So the late, if you've seen Entourage, do you
Entourage,
remember
Medellin? That's what I was thinking. Medellin! Did you see Entourage, Brad?
I did not.
Oh, so good. Medellin.
Right. So anyway, kind of all about that. So I think it's obviously a little like stylized, and some parts of it are kind of excessive and fictionalized. It's very interesting, and especially has some kind of contemporary relevance. But really well done. I mean, all the performances in that are pretty good. It's a little like cerebral and kind of slow moving at times. All in all, I would definitely recommend that. Right. I think the other thing I would maybe recommend with certain qualifications would be OA.
Oh, yeah.
From Netflix. That's a little risky.
I put that one on here
to recommend before. That. Yeah.
I don't know.
I haven't caught up on that yet. OA.
I think it's actually pretty good. I think it's an interesting thing. I know.
That would be what I'm doing. I haven't really seen watching Split, I haven't seen a film in a few weeks.
Yeah, I haven't watched it. I watched Odd Thomas this week.
Oh, and you did not like it.
I did. In the end, I didn't like it. At first, I did. But overall, I was like, eh. Came out a few years ago with Anton Yelchin. I didn't know it was directed by Stephen Sommers, who did the Mummy movies.
Oh, it's a Mummy film. I'm looking at the picture right now.
It was okay. I would recommend Series of Unfortunate Events. It is very good. I haven't made it all the way through, but it's good. I tried starting Frontiers.
Oh, it's a new Netflix show. It's popping up.
I made it about 10 minutes in, and it just wasn't working for me. Maybe I'll go back. I don't know. It's about traders, like fur traders and stuff. I don't know.
Netflix has just taken over. I know that happened a long time ago, but
take that Amazon, take that Hulu.
They have a new show coming out here soon. I forgot the name of it. Where'd Michael go? He knows the name of it.
Where is Michael?
Amazon or Netflix?
Netflix. Has Drew Barrymore and Timothy Oliphant.
Right.
They are just kind of your regular family. Drew Barrymore is a zombie, and they're still trying to live a normal life.
Oh, yeah. Somebody recommended it last week. Was it
Michael? Yeah. Well, thanks, everybody, for checking out The Cinema Guys.
Thanks for listening. If you see Michael, tell him we are missing him.
Where'd Michael go? And maybe sometime we'll see you at the movies.
Movies.